Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is. Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. On our program today, we tell how a new law in the United States may help hundreds of thousands of people worldwide. But first, researchers are finding new ways to ease hunger problems and improve nutrition in Africa. Christopher Cruz has this report.
Things may be changing soon for some crops in Africa. A group called the African Orphan Crops Consortium says these plants are not getting enough attention, and it thinks they could help ease hunger and improve nutrition on the continent. The consortium opened the African Plant Breeding Academy last year in Nairobi, Kenya. The academy is the result of cooperation among international organizations. They are hoping to use genetic information from 100 African plants and trees that researchers have largely ignored. But food scientists say these crops have lots of possibilities. Howard Yana Shapiro is a senior fellow at the University of California, Davis. He is also the chief agricultural officer and global director of plant science and external research for Mars Incorporated, the candy company. Mr. Shapiro says he began thinking about ways to improve nutrition at the local level after seeing how poor nutrition affects children in Africa and India. He says a woman who does not eat right during her pregnancy can affect the physical and mental health of a baby. These problems, he says, cannot be corrected. Mr. Shapiro spoke to VOA from Nairobi. He said the African Plant Breeding Academy will work on many different kinds of plants.
Some of them are tree leaves like baobab. Some of them are funny plants called African nightshade. Some fit into a family called coco yams. Some have names that are completely unfamiliar to anyone in the Western world, but are the basis of daily food for a family in rural Africa.
He says hundreds of African plants have been ignored because they are not economically important in international trade. But food scientists say the plants still have value to people in Africa. The African Orphan Crops Consortium plans to train plant breeders and researchers over a one-year period about the genetics of these crops. The consortium hopes they will produce more food with higher nutritional levels.
They're being trained as I speak. I just came from the classroom, and they're learning how to use these tools that this advanced laboratory will help them at their home institutions move forward breeding on these crops, which are so critical.
Mr. Shapiro says anything researchers learn will be shared with the world without cost.
I wanted to make the information, put it in the public domain, to speed breeding going forward to improve the nutritive quality of these plants.
I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jonathan Evans. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Early Earlier this year, President Barack Obama signed a new farm bill into law. Under the legislation, the federal government will no longer guarantee automatic payments to farmers. For more on the new law, we turn again to Christopher Cruz.
Critics say the law replaces the old payment system with new assistance that may violate international trade rules. The law also includes changes in how the United States helps hungry people around the world. The new farm bill ended $5 billion a year in automatic payments to farmers. The president said the law sends a message to people who have abused the system.
This bill helps to clamp down on loopholes that allowed people to receive benefits year after year, whether they were planting crops or not. And it saves taxpayers hard-earned dollars by making sure that we only support farmers when disaster strikes or prices drop.
The new legislation expands programs that protect farmers from bad weather or low crop prices. It raises the lowest price growers will be paid for some crops. And it offers a taxpayer-supported insurance program to farmers. The program guarantees that their wages do not drop much from year to year. Dan Sumner is an economist with the University of California, Davis. He told VOA on Skype that the new farm bill could cause problems.
And that's the kind of assurances that the U.S. government is willing to provide that most farmers in the world, in fact, don't have access to.
He adds that with the help of the government, American farmers can produce and export more crops. But he warns that could hurt crop prices.
That drives down world prices, and it's a little tougher for the farmers in developing countries to compete with that.
U.S. government subsidies pushed down world cotton prices in the early 2000s. The United States lost an international trade dispute over those payments. Dan Sumner says the new farm bill could reopen that dispute. But groups representing growers say trade rules do let governments pay a limited amount of subsidies to farmers. Dale Moore is the chief of policy at one of those groups, the American Farm Bureau Federation.
We're pretty confident that it would take an extremely bad situation for us to even come close to violating those particular limits, something the United States hasn't come close to in years.
Other changes in the bill should help food aid get to more needy people around the world. Aid groups will be able to spend more of the assistance they receive to buy food from markets near where it will be used. Earlier rules forced aid groups to buy food from American farmers. Eric Munoz works for the aid group Oxfam America.
Not only will that save money, but it will help reach people faster. So the actual program of buying locally is a much quicker response than buying food from the United States and shipping it.
He told VOA on Skype that with the same amount of money, help can now reach more hungry people. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And that's our program for today. Join us tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Thank you. Now, Words and Their Stories, a program in special English by The Voice of America. It is surprising how many expressions that Americans use every day came from the card game of poker. For example, you hear the expression, ace in the hole, used by many people who would never think of going near a poker table. An ace in the hole is any argument, plan, or thing kept hidden until needed. It is used especially when it can turn failure into success. In poker and most card games, the ace is the highest and most valuable card. It is often a winning card. In one kind of poker game, the first card to each player is given face down. A player does not show this card to the other players. The other cards are dealt face up. The players bet money each time they receive another card. No one knows until the end of the game whose hidden card is the winner. Often, the ace in the hole wins the game. Smart card players, especially those who play for large amounts of money, closely watch the person who deals the cards. They are watching to make sure he is dealing honestly. They want to be sure that he is not dealing off the bottom of the stack of cards. A dealer who is doing that has stacked the deck. He has fixed the cards so that he will get higher cards. He will win, and you will lose. The expression, dealing off the bottom, now means cheating in business as well as in cards. And when someone tells you that the cards are stacked against you, he is saying you do not have a chance to succeed. In a poker game, you do not want to let your opponents know if your cards are good or bad. So having a poker face is important. A poker face never shows any emotion, never expresses either good or bad feelings. No one can learn, by looking at your face, if your cards are good or bad. People now use poker face in everyday speech to describe someone who shows no emotion. Someone who has a poker face usually is good at bluffing. Bluffing is trying to trick a person into believing something about you that is not true. In poker, you bluff when you bet heavily on a poor hand. The idea is to make the other players believe you have strong cards and are sure to win. If they believe you, they are likely to drop out of the game. This means you win the money they have bet. You can do a better job of bluffing if you hold your cards close to your vest. You hold your cards close to you so no one can see what you have. In everyday speech, holding your cards close to your vest means not letting others know what you are doing or thinking. You are keeping your plans secret. We are not bluffing when we say we hope you have enjoyed today's program. This special English program, Words and Their Stories, was written by Marilyn Rice Cristiano. This is Bob Doty.
Thank you. This is Steve Ember.
And this is Faith Lapidus with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about Red Adair. He was famous for putting out dangerous oil well fires around the world.
Paul Neil Adair was born in Houston, Texas in 1915. He was one of five sons of a metal worker. He also had three sisters. While growing up, he became known as Red Adair because his hair was bright red. The color became a trademark for Adair. He wore red clothes and red boots. He drove a red car, and his crew members used red trucks and red equipment. As a young man, Red Adair dropped out of high school to help support his family. He worked as a laborer for several different companies. In 1938, Adair got his first oil-related job with the Otis Pressure Control Company.
During World War II, Adair served on a trained army team that removed and destroyed bombs. After the war, he returned to Houston and took a job with Myron Kinley. At the time, Kinley was the leader in putting out fires in oil wells. Red Adair worked with Myron Kinley for 14 years. But in 1959, Adair started his own company. During his 36 years in business, Red Adair and his crews battled more than 2,000 fires all over the world. Some were on land, others were on ocean oil drilling structures. Some fires were in burning oil wells, others were in natural gas wells.
Red Adair was a leader in a specialized and extremely dangerous profession. Putting out oil well fires can be difficult. This is because oil well fires are extinguished or put out at the wellhead just above ground. Normally, explosives are used to stop the fire from burning. The explosion robs the fire of oxygen. But once the fire is out, the well still needs to be covered or capped to stop the flow of oil. This is the most dangerous part of the process. Any new heat or fire could cause the leaking well and the surrounding area to explode.
Red Adair developed modern methods to extinguish and cover burning oil wells. They became known in the industry as wild well control techniques. In addition to explosives, the techniques involved large amounts of water and dirt. Adair also developed special equipment made of bronze metal to help extinguish oil well fires. The modern tools and his wild well control techniques earned Red Adair and his crews the honor of being called the best in the business. Red Adair was known for not being afraid. He was also known for his sense of calm and safety. None of his workers were ever killed while putting out oil well or gas fires. He described his work this way. It scares you, all the noise, the rattling, the shaking, but the look on everyone's face when you are finished and packing, it is the best smile in the world, and there is nobody hurt, and the well is under control.
Music. One of Red Adair's most important projects was in 1962. He and his crew put out a natural gas fire in the Sahara Desert in Algeria. The fire had been burning for 6 months. This famous fire was called the Devil's Cigarette Lighter. Fire from the natural gas well shot about 140 meters into the air. The fire was so big that American astronaut John Glenn could see it from space as he orbited Earth. The desert sand around the well had melted into glass from the extreme heat. News reports said Adair used about 340 kilograms of nitroglycerin explosive material to pull the oxygen out of the fire.
Adair's success with the Devil's Cigarette Lighter and earlier well fires captured the imagination of the American film industry. In 1968, Hollywood made an action film called Hellfighters. It was loosely based on events in Red Adair's life. Actor John Wayne played an oil well firefighter from Houston, Texas, whose life was similar to Adair's. Adair served as an advisor to Wayne while the film was being made. The two men became close friends. Adair said one of the best honors in the world was to have John Wayne play him in a movie. Here is John Wayne in the film Hellfighters. He has just flown into Venezuela to help his crew fight a dangerous fire. He has brought needed supplies with him.
Joe! It's about time you got back to earning an honest living.
If you think I'm going to say it's a pleasure to be here, forget it.
Hi, boss.
George, nice to see you. I spent a lot of your money.
Well, what did you do, buy up all the control heads in Houston?
Well, this far away from supplies, you get all the spares you can.
This Colonel Valdez, Chance, he's in charge of keeping us from getting shot.
Well, I hope you do a good job, Colonel.
If I do not, you will have my profound apologies.
The longer you guys stand there, the longer it's going to take to unload this thing.
Right, Joe.
In 1988, Adair fought what was possibly the world's worst offshore accident. It was at the Piper Alpha drilling structure in the North Sea. Occidental Petroleum operated the structure off the coast of Scotland. The structure produced oil and gas from 24 wells. 167 men were killed when the structure exploded after a gas leak. Red Adair had to stop the fires and cap the wells. He faced winds blowing more than 120 kilometers an hour and ocean waves at least 20 meters high.
In March of 1991, Red Adair went to Kuwait following the Persian Gulf War. He and his crews were called in to help put out fires set by the Iraqi army as it fled from coalition forces. But Adair faced serious problems in putting out the fires. In June, he flew to Washington, D.C., to talk to government officials about those problems. He told congressional lawmakers that he needed more water and more equipment. He also described his concerns about medical services for his men and the buried landmines throughout Kuwait.
Adair also met with then-President George H.W. Bush. President Bush listened to his concerns and offered his support. Within weeks, Adair had the equipment he needed to complete the job. The Red Adair Company capped more than 100 wells. His crews were among 27 teams from 16 countries called in to fight the fires. The crew's efforts put out about 700 Kuwaiti fires. Their efforts saved millions of barrels of oil. Some experts say the operation also helped prevent an environmental tragedy. The job had been expected to take 3 to 5 years. However, it was completed in just 8 months. In a ceremony, the Emir of Kuwait extinguished the last burning well on November 6, 1991. In addition to Kuwait, Adair and his men carried out 16 other jobs that year. They worked in India, Venezuela, Nigeria, the Gulf of Mexico, and the United States.
Red Adair had spent his 76th birthday in Kuwait, working side by side with his crew. When asked when he might retire, he told reporters, "Retire? I do not know what that word means. As long as a man is able to work, and he is productive out there, and he feels good, keep at it." Still, Red Adair finally did retire in 1994. At that time, he joked about where he would end up when he died. He said he hoped to be in heaven, but he said this about hell: "I have made a deal with the devil. He said he is going to give me an air-conditioned place when I go down there, if I go there, so I won't put all the fires out."
Red Adair died in 2004. He was 89 years old. At his funeral, many family members and friends honored him by wearing red clothes. Many Americans remember Red Adair for his bravery. He lived his life on the edge of danger. He was known for his willingness to risk his own life to save others. During his life, Adair received special letters of recognition from Presidents Lyndon Johnson, Jimmy Carter, and George H.W. Bush. One of the letters said this: "You have served your country well by your willingness to do a dangerous and important job with a rare ability. In an age said to be without heroes, you are an authentic hero."
This program was written by Jill Moss. It was produced by Luan Davis. Our audio engineer is David Boddington. This is Faith Lapidus.
And this is Steve Ember. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.